Regular, you got the tape on? We're ready
to go. Yes, sir. We're ready. We're rolling.
Regular meeting of the Improvements Committee, May 6, 2025. Director Jenko's present, Director Merchant's present, Director of Operations is present. We'll call the meeting to order. Comments from the public, are there any at this time?
I don't have any here, sir.
Okay. Item three, Improvement Staff Report. Eric?
The first item we have is WSC, the Water Vision and Scopes, and a fee estimate. We've kind of been working on this to kind of have a path forward for water augmentation and supply, so I think they're here to answer any questions that the committee may have before this moves forward, or if it moves forward to the board for either action or further discussion. So WSC is here.
You want to do that first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it would help to, and it's first lined up that they can go over it, so that way they have it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So if you guys want to come forward and.
Where you want to do? Here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we can hear you and we can catch on tape.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, hi, I'm Rob Natoli. I'm with Water Systems Consulting.
And I'm Stephanie Yard.
So I'm the project manager for your guys' Water Vision project that we have the scope up on the screen for. And if you would like me to walk through the scope or answer questions, let me know how you'd like to facilitate.
It's up to you.
I think we could walk through the scope a little bit just to kind of give us kind of a, you know, 30,000 foot view or an executive summary of it, if
sure.
you will.
Sure. Yeah, so this Water Vision project, really what we are trying to create is right in the title. It's a water vision for your guys' future. It's a 50-year long-term plan that involves the community that will enable you guys to buy in together on what you want to do going forward. So this is a document that would build off of your existing planning work that you've done to date. We're going to leverage technical analysis that's been completed. We're not going to repeat work that's been done, but working toward building trust, building faith, making sure we're looking at all the alternatives, and building a plan that the community can rally around and say, this is where we want to go. It's not going to have every answer in it yet, but it's going to have a roadmap and a plan going forward. So that's at a very high level. If we just go through the tasks of the project in general here, task one, I'll admit, this is a little boring. It's project management. It's keeping the project going. Administration type efforts also includes meetings with Eric and his team to stay on the same page there. But if we move down into task two in the scope of work, this is where what we do is a little bit unique. We are mostly civil engineers at WSC, but we have integrated strategic communications, and that's what we pride ourselves in being able to do, is to take the technical and take the communication and put them together. And so our strategic communication team, along with the technical team that Stephanie and I fall into, work together to make this not just a technical plan that sits on a shelf and gathers dust, but that people believe in. So there's stakeholder meetings here. There's two groups. There's some small group stakeholder meetings that are a part of the project. There's moments where smaller parts of the community or critical stakeholders, we leverage moments with them to make sure this plan is tracking with their needs and with the interests. And then there's these larger stakeholder workshops that are a really key part of developing this Water Vision plan. There's six of them included in the project. They all have a unique purpose. It's building the values. It's, what are we trying to do together? There's a lot of listening from our team. We need to hear what you guys are looking to do on this project. So looking at values, looking at concerns, it's very important we understand what are the challenges you guys see, but also bring to you guys from a technical side, what do we see challenges? What are our concerns as engineers? Bring those together, have a good understanding. Let's all feel good about what are the challenges we're trying to solve. And then really bring out what are all the potential solutions. Let's look at everything, all the potential options. We're going to have to screen those down. Some will not be practical. And then compile those into recommended solutions, recommended portfolios of potential water projects. So there'll be a adaptive plan. It's a roadmap, we call them, that will have the end product of what we do isn't here's the exact projects, here's when to do them. There's a lot of unknown in the future. It will be a here's what we think to do, but there's triggers that will send it different directions. There'll be different paths that could happen in the future. And so it's an adaptive plan that can handle future conditions that we all know are unknown. So those workshops really are key milestones along the project. Make sure we're staying on the same page and make sure that we're solving the right problems and that this is resonating with everyone in the community and with the district. As we get past section two or task two in the scope, that's where we're getting more into the technical analysis. And a lot of these tasks are leveraging the work that's been done on the on recent planning and past planning documents. So we're trying to leverage that as much as possible, not repeat work. So there's demand projections, documenting the water supply challenges, as I discussed previously. And then every chapter or every task in our scope includes the report section that's associated. So we're documenting it for the final water vision plan. Task four is include some specific work for your community on groundwater options that's specific to well siting. Groundwater is a great solution. We know that you guys are kind of on the border of productive groundwater, and so analyzing well siting alternatives and well where we want to prioritize and maybe look into those specifically as a potential water supply alternative. So there's an optional task related to well siting to put a plan together for test holes and look at capacity, but that's put in as an optional task. Task five of our scope is evaluating potential supply solutions. And again, this is where we're looking at what could help. We want to look far and wide, partnerships, groundwater, interties, reuse. There's a whole gamut. So we'll be looking at that wide list, developing screening criteria for those projects, and narrowing that list to projects that you guys want to see in your future water supply portfolio. And that brings us to the next phase. Task six is really developing a water supply portfolio. There's looking at different themes for those portfolios, looking at different ways to attack the future, but ultimately we're working toward a recommended portfolio that is flexible, that is meeting the objectives of the district and the community. And then as I talked about, task seven is about the adaptable roadmap, and task eight is just documentation, preparing draft and final reports. There's a few optional tasks that we included as well. These are not critical to execution of the plan, but are items that could potentially need to get executed or if, as desired by the district for creating a brand for the project. That's something we've done with other clients that felt that was an important aspect. If there's additional messaging or content development support, and then as I mentioned before, the groundwater evaluation. Additional task.
Questions? First thing, when I looked at your opening, I just wanted you to be aware that there's not three, there's 5 months where we're restricted from pumping from the river. That goes from November to May. I think it started out saying there were 3 months.
Oh, okay. But
it is five
months. Okay.
The areas that I think were of most interest to me, and you know, I'm considering the pieces versus the whole context, were the 4.1, the well sites, and the exploratory boring.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like what would be the equivalent of a geotechnical analysis? Is that what does that look like when it's finished? Is what I guess what I'm asking.
With it after the exploratory boring?
I mean, do you take the entire district? Do you take areas of that are the district and surrounding areas? I mean, what is that? And again, I guess the only way I can describe it is how does it come together at the end? What does it look like? Does it outline areas we should try first? Does it outline the number of wells we should dig? I'm just trying to.
Yeah. So for the well siting study, that's going to look at available parcels. It will consider groundwater availability of what we generally know. Groundwater gets more productive the further east we move. And it's going to look at if there's any district-owned property that would be, you don't have to buy. And then what we know about existing hydrological conditions, again, that's where is groundwater likely at? Within the district's area is a priority, but if need be, you can site wells outside of the district's area that creates additional complication and agreements. So that's the task 4.1 portion. And recommendations from that will be priority 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's the sites that we would recommend for wells, where they could be productive and where they're easy to incorporate into the system. The optional task, if we flip to the end of this scope here, this is actually drilling a test well, exploratory boring there, and then doing testing on that to confirm the capacity that we could get out of that well. And so it's going to be at a recommended location. I believe what's in here right now is for, I don't know how many test holes, but this is our scope is to develop the plan. We wouldn't be drilling the well. So we'd be coordinating to get a driller for doing the drilling and the test hole.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to get flow rates, actual flow rates, test flow rates of what you could get out of that well from that study.
One of the things that is a conclusion in the existing integrated water master plan that Atkins made was that while and they recommended various numbers and locations of wells from 3 to 5 and then costed it based on whether we were gonna treat it at one location or another location, and costs were all over the lot. In my head it's like $12 to even $29 million or whatever it was. Is there a way out of probably may sound like a stupid question, is there a way when you dig a test well that you can extrapolate from that location and understand the productivity you would get from varying locations? If we find X amount of water in a test well, and that water is either low volume or low quality or both, or just the opposite of that, what does it tell us about this whole geographical, geological analysis?
And you certainly can identify, the more test holes that you drill and test, the better data you have, and so the better confidence you have on what will happen at other well locations. If you're going to install production wells, it's good to have a test well really close to that site for confidence level on you're going to get production before you make that investment. And so we want to locate test wells in locations where we think, hey, this is a good chance. This is one of our best chance locations. But you can look at trends. You can develop trends off that.
One of the conclusions that Atkins reached was that even in their analysis of increasing wells, for example, from 3 to 5, mm-hmm. they claimed directly in the report itself that there's not enough water here to satisfy ongoing additional demand in the district. There's enough water there to build what we're going to talk about at some point, an emergency source of supply. So that's one part of what I don't know. And the other part is, have you had any experience to this point, and it's been more recent than not, with how this coordinates with the area's groundwater authority? We have our own mm-hmm. situated here. What is their role in this? Or is there one as it's required now by law, or is it something else? I don't completely understand that.
We're finishing up a similar project for the city of Folsom for a long-term water vision, and we found that the Regional Water Authority and the Groundwater Authority have been willing stakeholders. They've attended all the workshops and been a part of developing project ideas. You know, that's their role. They want to find water solutions for the area that makes sense for everyone. So they, I think they would happily participate in being a part of your plan, and I think it'd be an important stakeholder to include as a part of the process.
Is there any consideration what they did up in Folsom for this, and it's an RWA deal, this water banking? I mean, how does that play into this? I mean,
it's certainly a supply solution to consider. Everyone has a unique consideration when you're thinking about water banking. You have to have a way to get water into the ground, and then you have to have a water bank that can store it, and then you have to have a way to get it out of the ground. And there's frankly, it's a difficult issue. These are ASR wells, aquifer storage and recovery wells. People have been doing it in the region for a while, and we've learned a lot of what's difficult about operating those wells. It's not, you know, the silver bullet solution that just fixes everything, but it is a supply solution that could be considered. Partnerships where someone has groundwater wells that you could use and to creatively do that banking is generally a lot more cost effective. But it's a supply solution that I think we would have to look at for you guys for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Randy?
So as part of this, we have been talking about an urban water plan. This is obviously not that. Does this lead into an urban water plan that this would take this data and move it forward, or where would we be with an urban water plan after this?
Yeah, the urban water management plan is a pretty prescribed document by the state. You know, do every 5 years when you're above 3,000 connections, and certainly the supply and demand evaluation that's considered here, that can be used for an urban water management plan in the future. The urban water management plan really is about showing that for the next 40 years you have reliable supply to meet your demands, and then also showing what will you do in a drought. You know, how are you going to manage water use and water demands and in those situations? And so there's overlapping subjects, and the analysis done here can get pulled in there, but urban water management plan is a little bit of a unique state mandated document. You kind of got to follow their prescribed tasks, mm-hmm. and so it can be leveraged, but they're not the same thing. Yeah.
Good.
The supplies you identify in here, as you move forward with them, those supplies would be what kind of could help you show, here's our long-term supply, here's how we're meeting our long-term demands. And so this is helping answer some of those questions that need to get documented in a urban water management plan. Okay. In the long term.
I think I understand the scope.
Questions? Comments? Anything?
Yeah, I don't have any.
Bob? Come on.
So it's not an urban water plan.
it's not an integrated water management plan, or is this part of the integrated?
Go over there, Bob.
That way I catch it on the, listening to it.
Is this the part that's going to finish the integrated water master plan that's missing from our current one, or is this a completely different rabbit trail?
I don't think, with the exception me, with the exception of three mitigation strategies that it overviews, that the plan really gives us a plan. It tells us to some degree what a problem is, but I don't think it offers up groundwater, but I said with the conditions in the conclusion that, you know, don't use it for production, there's not enough. I'm assuming that's, and not enough is why you don't use it. It gave us the option of going into the river in the summer. Bob, you asked me the question. And so I don't think there's any solutions, quite honestly, I don't think there's any workable solutions in there. That's what we're trying to come up with, is a workable solution.
So this information would complete our integrated water master plan?
Well, it would offer an opportunity, I think, to create a plan to go satisfy the demand that is a shortfall in the report.
So, I think you're going this direction because the integrated water study didn't give enough information for the board to accept it as a reliable document, correct?
To some degree, yeah.
So then this...
My opinion, I'll have to ask the other four.
So is this money being spent trying to complete the integrated water study? Or is this a completely separate document, and meanwhile we just let the integrated water study just float out in space?
Well, I think they've just described that they're going to use large portions of the data that were laid down in that report.
Will this close the loop on the integrated water study?
I don't know.
So I
think if closing the loop is finding solutions to eliminate the demand shortfall, maybe so. But I don't know.
Is the intention that we can't move forward until an integrated water study plan is complete as far as development is concerned?
Well, that's, according to the rules, no, that's not complete. But I think what would be the risk of moving forward and dropping a completed application into the county and having the county come to us, which they will automatically, and ask us for a water supply assessment at this point in time, and again, you'd have to ask the other four, at this point in time, you won't get the answer you want.
Will this give us that answer?
No, it won't give us the answer unless the results of what these tests are fruitful, I believe.
So what's the point of doing this if it doesn't get us to the end of the road that we want?
Well, what is it you want to do if you don't start drilling wells and looking for water?
Why do we need a scope to do that? Honestly,
well,
I mean, why
here's,
don't...
Here's why, because Greg Dyer has suggested in one document that we run out behind the Clementia Dam and dig out there. We've had suggestions that we go to the golf course and start looking over there. We've had suggestions we go down to Anatolia and look down there. We've had suggestions we go up to EID and look down there.
Will this document answer
those questions? The document won't do a damn thing unless it provides us with a substantial amount of water. And we can't start that process until we start, and I would hope cohesively, looking for a strategy to go explore finding it.
Because it seems to me that we're starting and stopping, spending a ton of money, starting and stopping, without a clear path.
You're right. That's what this is.
What's this? Why is this a clear path? Explain to me.
Well, I think it's a clear path. path because it gives you a roadmap on how to proceed after a careful analysis is performed. Not take Greg's memo and go look here.
No, I understand. I don't care about that stuff. Right, I want to know what this is doing.
That's yes, go ahead. Please. Feel free.
Yeah, and I missed your name.
Bob.
So, Bob, what we've done with what we're trying to do with this water vision plan and what we've done for the city of Folsom is we've taken all these plans that have happened over years and years and years, and they 30 years of plans, and this project brings those together. And like you mentioned, John, you're referring to several, oh, what about this project? What about that? What about this? It's putting all those projects on the table at once. It's identifying, okay, what are the vulnerabilities of your system right now? What's limiting, you know, growth? What's limiting supplies during droughts? What are our concerns? And I understand there's some real concerns, and you guys understand them much better than I do at this point. And then we're going to take all that past analysis that's been done, add some more to it, and go, here's all the options. Let's get all the options on the table, and let's evaluate and screen those down and put that into a plan to go, hey, this is the vision. Where are we going in the future? You say, does it make sense to go drill wells? It's hard to evaluate if going and drilling wells makes sense when you're not comparing it to a connection with EID or, you know, with any other solution. And so that's what this project, it's high level planning to say, what's the path? What's the path? Where should we be investing our money so we can actually move forward? And a big part of this project is also making sure you believe in it, John believes in it, Randy believes, everybody is kind of going, oh, yeah, I'm tracking this. This is making sense. And so we're bringing everyone along so that we get to the end and we have a roadmap, we all go, okay, this actually makes sense. So that's what our document does. And in that roadmap, I could show you a roadmap from a previous project, but it is, here's the analysis you need to do next. Here's the project we recommend building. If those don't work, you got to go this way next. And so it's
if they do this, how long till we would get to the part where we would have
the final document?
Yeah.
I don't know what schedule we gave you in here, Eric, but it's 12.
It says 18 months.
18 months is what we've done.
From conception.
To the end.
And then you're 2 years out before you're doing anything.
So that's a win.
Because it's another 18 months. So the strategy here has been kick the can down the road so there can't be any development. And so...
Oh, time out, pal.
Oh,
yeah.
That's my opinion.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So, this is a grand plan to spend another couple hundred thousand dollars, another 18 months to accomplish the goal that has been in Rancho Marietta for quite a while. We all know what the problem is. Why don't we just go to the solution portion? Why don't we just hire a geologist and go out and help us find, instead of going through 18 months of community engagement and dumping another $500,000 down the toilet, because when we get to the end of this, it's going to be, you know, I don't feel so good about this one. Let's find another company and spend another 18 months and another $300,000, because I'm not yet comfortable with this. Because that's what's been happening in the recent past. What makes this any different? That's why I keep asking you, is this the conclusive document? I don't know. Was the last one a conclusive document? I don't know. Is the next one a conclusive document? I don't know. It'd be nice to hear, yes, when this is done, this is it. We're not going down any other roads. This is it. But you can't say that because you want to wait and see what the results are. And then if you don't like the results, then we go on another 18-month journey. I think this is a waste of time and a waste of money. That's my opinion. Nothing personal with you guys. We already have an integrated water study that tells us everything this is. Maybe you don't like the way it's written, but the conclusions are going to be exactly the same. The solutions may be different, and I'm interested in solutions, but I'm not sure that this is the way to get them.
Bob, I've made myself clear what I think our path forward is, and I don't...
Sorry.
I don't...
That's my own talking limit.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you said, except that my position hasn't changed from the beginning of this process, and that is that we need to finish the Integrated Water Master Plan. People are unhappy with it. It needs to be revised based on the latest information. It needs to be tweaked and the questions answered and all of those things. But our way forward, our most practical way forward, is to finish the Integrated Water Master Plan document and then go out and drill wells.
I agree.
I have said that from the beginning, and I haven't changed my mind. And again, your presentation is great. I'm sure you'd come up with a great document, and the board may very well decide to go that direction, but it's not the direction that I would go. I think we have enough information. You're right in that we need to move from this to a solution, but we need to finish this.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Any other comments, questions, Amelia?
No, sir, I don't have any other comments.
I have one.
Oh, I have a comment, Richard Gears.
Just one little detail.
reading that document, I had questions about the small groups. It seems like you're going on the right direction, open and transparent. So I didn't see where there was going to let us know who was in those small groups and what their conclusions were. I assume that you will provide that information to us, but I'd like to confirm that.
Yeah, and I don't know who would be in there yet, so that's why it doesn't say who. But as we go through the process, we've generally found that there's people with key insights and key information that a small group meeting that gets into technical details, some of those have been with water authorities or other people that are very knowledgeable about water planning in the area. We'll have those, but we always report back on what we learned and who we talked to. It's a key part is vulnerability or transparency, openness. This is a trust building exercise. This is a trust building project and really a key part to success.
I kind of assumed that. I just wanted to confirm it, so thank you.
No more public comments, sir.
Very good. All right, thanks so much. I appreciate the initial presentation.
Thank you.
So I'm looking for direction from the committee to see whether we want to move this forward as a discussion item or an item to take action upon. I think that's kind of the conversation to be had at the committee for you guys to give me direction which we want to move it forward with.
Well, it needs to go to the board either way, so we get input from the other three folks.
We'll take it as an action item because that does open it for discussion, and then that way there's discussion and put the potential for action.
Okay.
And then the board can choose which direction they want to go with that.
You good, that, Randy?
Yeah, take it to the board.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll have it on the agenda in 2 weeks.
I'll say the same thing I've been saying for 6 months, but yeah, we'll take it to the board and see what happens.
Okay, thank you very much.
So the second item is unanswered IWMP questions. I don't have a lot on this. I have to apologize. I was out. The work group hasn't met since then. There was some potential questions that were brought up. We were working on answers towards those questions. We are looking at the data and some of the supply situations and also as well as reclaim water type usage, how much is available. And how that usage comes into play. That's some of the conversations that have really been had basically on the supply and demand side so far. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but that's kind of where we're at in the process so far. We are hoping to meet again here soon for a whole day to really try to line out a lot of items if we can do that.
Yeah, that was and we had some conflicts with him being out and then with Jim being away. The next meeting in the next week or so will be a full day, so we can go through everything. We're trying to do this quickly. I mean, I'm not.
Can we set a date on it? Can we say by next improvements committee we'll Questions will be in out there, and then maybe they'll even have the answers back. This is dragging on too long.
All right, we can bring you. I don't know whether we have solutions. I don't think we have solutions.
No, I didn't say solutions. I said give them a chance to answer your questions.
Okay.
So that we have something to look at.
Okay. Okay. We can move the process forward. We can.
I think some of it was provided as well. I think some of it went off. I don't know where that went with Lisa. She had received some questions that were a part of that early on. There was a page that was forwarded to her. I thought she was going to have some answers, but I'm not sure.
She might be waiting for all of them to do it all at once.
I had two
pages of questions. And with the
current climate, I'm not sure where that's all at. I hadn't heard anything back, so I wasn't sure. I think maybe she might have been confused because I offered to answer some, and then the direction was that she was going to handle it. I haven't heard anything in return, but we can definitely work on some that we're in control of.
Okay.
All right. Item number three is the fiscal year 25-26 CIP. I must apologize. So I've made some adjustments to this. I do need to make one further adjustment to it. I'm going to remove about $20,000 to $25,000 from the communication portions and also the sewer plant automation project. That's to do vehicle replacement. That would be an ongoing, most likely every year type replacement. There's some vehicles that are well over 15 years old that their insides are pretty well damaged. I think it would just be an easy item to list, so that way we're replacing 10 vehicles, one every 10 years. That didn't get put on this. We did have a vehicle that was damaged, and so we are short one vehicle currently. We would look at the best options to be able to procure those, whether it be, you know, a used vehicle type or a brand new vehicle. The discussion with the general manager was over them being electric. That requirement's not for 10 years. So that we could propose two vehicles, you know, one electric, one gas. And see where we want to go with that, because most likely a vehicle purchased now would need to be replaced prior to that requirement in 10 years. The ones as we get closer that are like 5 years out, I would recommend that we go EV, because they would fall into that 10-year pattern. And there's still some ongoing conversations and changes in litigation at the state level that may change that requirement. So I think, you know, we'll show both options and then make a decision from there if that works. But so what I'm projecting there is that water communication update would change to $175,000. The sewer plant automation project would change to $475,000. And that would give us the $50,000. And I don't think it's going to cost that much for the vehicle, but it just gives us some flexibility.
So this water vision plan, $400,000, which could turn into $500,000 easily as far as I see, would be paid for out of reserves.
Yeah, it could come from water augmentation or reserve. I think the two are very similar, but yes. It wouldn't be something that comes out of the operational budget, in my mind.
Isn't one of the options we have here, when you're looking at the whole report, back to, for example, the two critical areas, which were what we just all were talking about, was section 4.1 and 2.1, which was the well sites and the boring. I mean, what I'm looking for, you know, that's non-administrative, okay, is if we're going to drill wells, I mean, I'd like a plan. Or we could take a vote, you know. Greg wants to drill one over here. Randy wants to drill one over here. I'd like one close to my garden. But I mean, it seems to me that, and maybe you can evaluate that against another type of geotechnical study. You know, where you have a company that comes in here, but. But even if we have a company come in, I'm not comfortable drilling one by one. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay. Maybe the first one gushes water out like, you know.
So I can kind of help with that. Typically, what you would have is a geotechnical feasibility, a hydrologist that kind of looks at the area, determines the formation, tries to locate what would be the most advantageous areas to do test bore sites. They do test bore sites, which we've seen in the past. That gives us an idea of Title 22 water, what's found. And then it also gives you an idea of supply. Those bores are usually typically sealed back up at the end and then assessed. And then you would go to production following that, and typically you would drill a full bore production well one at a time. And I'm guessing in this area with the geology that a lot of those are going to be placed in a pretty close area, if we will, or at least follow kind of the same pattern, because most likely that's where a lot of the water is going to be found and also be replenishable. Adkins, with its idea of just an emergency supply, usually you would see those augmenting, you know, your normal supply of water to store surface water if they're able to produce, because usually what you're looking at in a well is what's called sustainable yield, meaning you can pump that sustainably without damaging that area for quite a few years, which we're talking like 20 to 50 years, without seeing kind of an impact to that. So the idea that you need a well that meets basically the full demand of the system would be great if you found it. But the idea that you find wells that produce less than the full demand also then saves, you know, raw water or surface water storage for the rest of the year. So there is, you know, there's plenty of systems that don't meet their full demand on one or the other. It's an augmenting type basis. And I think I would agree, you're going to need someone, the district's going to need someone to come in and do some type of a feasibility hydrologic study, whether it's WSC or another firm. Even prior to well drillers would come out and start testing with bores.
I was a little flippant. They're talking about finishing up the integrated water master plan and then going out and drilling wells. What I meant by going out and drilling wells was hiring a geotech to do the study. And I also would throw in there that the developer has offered to cooperate in this procedure in a couple different ways, but that gives us a lot more leeway in where we could, a geotech could start looking at where is the water around here, because obviously they own the property. We own little pieces here and there. I think the key to this process of finding wells that produce is going to be cooperating with the developer. And they've told me many times, or told this group many times, that they are on board to do whatever it takes to find water. And that just makes sense.
Yeah, and I also would disagree with you, Randy. It's very common that in entities, it's actually a requirement of development in some cities that they meet a two-source supply, meaning they connect in the system, but they also provide a source that meets the full demand. That's usually something that would be in the code for the city, like city code, city ordinance, but it's not uncommon. And we should be working hand-in-hand with the developers to look at areas that potentially, from a feasibility study, that they could potentially either grant an easement or turn the property over to the district so that we have control over it and the water, to help, in essence, basically supply water year-round without the risk of running out.
Can we evaluate the WSC solution and a geotech analysis simultaneously to get an idea of what each would provide and what each would cost?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that because it was an optional task for them. I'm sure that they could make recommendations of firms, and we could look at firms that are familiar with this area. I think that's highly critical, is to find someone that understands kind of the geology in this area and what we're facing with a well study, to kind of provide us some information. That could also use the older, I believe it's the Dunn study, and look at some of those old test bores and kind of come to a determination. I do know with where the airport is located, some of that is a risk because airport has had PFOA, PFOS concerns recently with basically any type of fighting of a fire, the fire extinguishing for a plane. And so there could be concerns around that area. But I think it behooves us to kind of do them both at the same time and start. And then, you know, they'd probably use that information or tie it together as part of it. So I don't see a reason to wait.
It's a no-brainer. The first person you ought to contact is Dunn. Get a proposal from them. And the only thing that's going to change from what they previously did is to integrate with the developer and say, hey, you know, not only do we have this area here, but we've got the golf courses, we've got the south. You know, what are our options?
Yeah, I can reach out to them and have them prepare a proposal and bring that to the committee at the next improvements.
Okay, so if I may, we were on the CIP budget with the changes that he made. Is it the wish of this committee to move this CIP to the board with the budget for recommendation on the 21st?
Did we get all the way through that?
Yeah, so this is the full. From the last meeting, I was asked to reduce it to about $2.6 million. This is right at that $2.6 million. The WSC Water Vision, this is just on there as a placeholder. If that goes away, that money, it isn't like the money just disappears. It would be put into another type of improvement. So that may change. You know, we could list it a few ways or clean it up so that it's not specifically spelled towards that. But yes, this is the full presentation for both water and sewer on what the CIPs are. If you scroll down, we'll kind of cover a few because there was also questions about the Lumos report. So I wanted to kind of cover this and answer some questions that have been kind of coming up. The Lumos report, I want to highlight this, is done specifically on age of infrastructure. And so what they did was take age of infrastructure, not including any runtime or actual usage of infrastructure. And so a lot of the items that are listed at the top that we can see, those are all Granley's pump station pumps. We know that the 500 horsepower pumps are basically not used almost ever. And so typically what we do is bump those and rotate them to ensure that the bearings aren't sitting in place and causing grooves and causing damage. So a lot of these items up here it's not necessary to replace them all at once based off of age. And so a lot of the monetary value of them or of replacing them would be done basically as they fail or as needed. Typically, most of these can also handle a lot of service. And so a lot of the water items actually aren't as in bad shape as they are. But what we need to get started as a district is definitely a main and connection replacement program from year to year where we start replacing water main and service connections based off of age and also breaks. Typically, you'd want to go after an area that has high breakage first because it may not be old, but there may be something going on in that area that would be prioritized over necessarily age. And then what I followed up with was a lot of the lift station stuff here. I wanted to show what's being done. So the yellow is what's being done or has been done and already replaced as part of our programs. And so we are biting off chunks of this at a time. We are replacing electrical panels that are highlighted. We are replacing pumps that are highlighted at these lift stations throughout the system. Most of the CIP, a lot of this is being done, plus the generators are set where we can purchase them, and that's also highlighted in the Lumos report. A lot of them are aged. They do then have an air quality control board type stipulation, and so those items do need replaced. But I wanted the board and this committee to be aware of what's already been done and what's currently being done or is set to be done this next year with them. And so the ones that are upcoming are highlighted in pink on that report.
Highlighted in pink.
Yeah, I believe there was only a few. Maybe did I not get any? I thought there was a couple. Maybe I didn't get to it. Yeah, it looks like it was just in the yellow, so I apologize for that.
So, Eric, at the board meeting that you weren't at, the CIP list that we were presented with was like twice this amount, and my objection was that we're pulling money out of our reserve accounts because we're spending more than what we're putting in based on our $16 a month. And now I think what you've got here and what I heard you say about the, if we don't do the water vision, we'll spend it someplace else, is not exactly what I had in mind or where I think we should go. I think if we're going to spend this on CIP projects, what we put into reserves every year, we're never going to catch up. And part of that is our fees are too low, but we also have to watch what we're spending the money on. So I guess where I disagree with you is if we don't do the water vision plan or take, it doesn't matter which line item here, but we got to start building up our reserves, and we're not going to build up our reserves if we just keep spending what we're putting in. We're never going to catch up.
Yeah, and I don't disagree.
Our reserve balances are way too low.
Right, and I
somehow we got to move them back. I understand there's things that have to be done to keep the operation going, but we need to keep in mind that we should be increasing the balances in those accounts, not just spending what comes in.
So I'm going to say this. I'm not in charge of finance. Most places typically have what's called a reserve policy, meaning you have a policy that states what that reserve balance should be based off of your annual operating balance. I don't necessarily know that the district has that. Most cities and agencies do, and when you go for bond rating, that's kind of an important thing, because what they want to look at is that your reserve is efficient, but you also don't want an overly large reserve, because then what happens is it starts to look like you're not spending and getting items done, and so you are still kicking that can down the road and the cost of it goes up.
Well, I
do agree.
I don't think anybody's going to accuse us of having an overly large reserve account. In fact, the grand jury looked at it and said we should have $10 million more in those accounts. So,
yeah, some places
I don't see that as an issue at this point.
Right, I don't also. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that most places have just a policy based off of it, meaning what they do is say we want 2 years of our operating budget as our reserve policy. And so once you hit that, that's when you start basically making sure that you're still running even, but that you're not growing it. And so there's kind of that. And what I meant by...
Not in my lifetime. So I'm not sure why we're even having this conversation.
Yeah, I was only just feeding off of what you said about the water vision. And so the water vision, to me, if that money became available because we've already booked it there and scheduled it, what I would rather see that go to is a main replacement program. We also know that we're going to have money to spend upcoming as part of the villages redoing their lines. That's something that's going to be ongoing to the district in perpetuity forever. Typically, that's a set percentage of main that you replace a year. Somewhere between 2 and 5% is kind of an industry standard. That's what I would try to see if that became available, that we line it towards that. That way also, as the villages come up, that's already like a funded project that we do. The project that was removed this year still needs to get done. We have to replace or convert from chlorine gas to hypochlorite. That's basically what's been removed. And that's a 3-year cycle. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to, hopefully we can create a policy that kind of states where we should be on reserves.
I just was, and it perplexes me, because when I looked, for example, at EID, I mean, they've layered 3 separate bond issues, one on top of each other, and that's how they generate the kind of money they say they need to keep their reserves adequate in their operation running. So if you took our $16 a month and you added another $15 to it, that's a significant increase. It generates $540,000 over an annual basis. That's a long way to catching up. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I'm sorry, it's what?
It's $540,000 if you take $15 a month times 3,000 connections times 12 months, you get $540,000, I believe.
Okay.
So that's the net impact of doubling our reserve contribution, which, you know, it's a significant hit on the monthly bill. And, you know, our problem remains that, you know, we're running a highly sophisticated operation that does things that, I mean, we're generating more recycled water than some cities are generating, and we have to pay to do it, and there's no revenue reimbursement for it. So what we do here is expensive, and we don't have enough people to put it through. So when Bob comes to the podium and says, oh, well, all you guys are, you know, absolutely against development, well, that's a good reason not to be against development. It's at least it gives you some amortization, takes the 3,000 to 3,500, still doesn't generate you a hell of a lot of money, but it's better than what we got now. So I'm just highlighting that. It's a problem. That's it. Continue on, sir.
All right.
With that said, with the changes that he's going to make to this, you're okay with this going to the board for our CIPs for this year? Yes?
Yes. Yeah. What, just, do you remember what was is that consistent at all with the number that was in there when we went through the first reading and the first set of numbers?
So this is what matches up almost identically to this year and this year's budget, and that's what I tried to match. I wanted to make sure that I had the chlorine gas conversion just to have the conversation over it.
Okay.
And that's why it was listed there. I mean, some of this stuff also will save money and will also help development, meaning those distribution system improvements are critical to how the plants run and how we distribute water across the system. They're absolutely necessary for the Rio Oso zone to meet demand, to make sure that we don't have an incident like we've had in the past where one side of the system runs out of water. Mm-hmm. And some of that can be covered in development fees as well as it's coming on. And that's what those fees are intended for. But this is a portion of it to get us there.
Are those numbers for Plant 2, the retrofit of Plant 2, are they included in here?
Plant 2 is kind of already where it's at and done. I haven't looked at expanding at all. Basically, what it's looking at is what we would call the control strategies for it and having it programmed. Currently, the way the plants are called, only one plant is called, they're called off of Van Vleck. They're not called off of Rio Oso, and so that highlights some of our issues. We need to have a programmer come in and redo a lot of the programming. Also, a lot of the programming has been listed as proprietary, and so it's to update that, move us over to something that's non-proprietary. Part of it also is we're required now to report on our diversions in an hourly format. We don't have the technology to do that, so that would also help us in our diversion to make sure that we're complying with DWR and State Water Resources Control Board for the size of volume that we divert, which is now an hourly diversion reporting.
Okay.
So a lot of that's added into it.
You know, I had seen that initial report we got for the upgrades to the plant, where the guy came in, did the inspection, and gave us the cost. And the other part of that was the concern over the fireproofing.
This does not have any fireproofing to the building or any of that associated with this. We could use some of it for that, and that's why there's stuff listed the way it is more as a plan. And then what we would do is, as we add items that we want to do, we can add them in as basically a bullet item and show the value or the quantity coming out of that specific line item. But that is, it is a huge concern. Also, some of the concerns were to connect the raw water line into the finished water line through an air gap system so that if there's ever a fire, we can pump water directly out of the river to combat a large scale or community fire, if you will. And so there's a lot of plans in there that aren't specifically listed out that are much more on paper somewhere else and in my mind of what we need to get done to build resiliency for the community.
Okay. The other thing that came up I think it was in the last meeting, was the question about, you know, the fire protection of the hillside with all the trees that it's up above Plant 2. And I checked with Phyllis and who ran the project for RMA, and that has been done. They've been in there, and that area has been cleaned.
Yeah, there's been a lot of vegetation mitigation that's gone out there. The site is pretty small. The building is wood. The roof, I believe, is tile, not metal, and so there definitely needs to be some. And it's been highlighted and brought up before. I think they passed on it, but honestly, it's a high fire risk, and the last thing we want to do is lose water capability.
Okay.
And so at some point, it does need to get done. We'll have to have somebody look at the siding and determine. I think the structure will probably stay and exist, but I'm guessing that there would need to be updates.
Okay. Next case.
Okay, thank you very much.
So next up is Fastenal. There's an agreement we're looking to get in place with Fastenal. Basically, what this would be to basically incorporate a warehouse out in our warehouse. Currently, the way we purchase items is through various suppliers. The Fastenal agreement comes through what's called NASPO. It's a large purchasing agreement that's nationwide. And what they do is search out vendors to provide the best prices. Currently, the NASPO agreement for Fastenal is from the state. So California State Procurement Services is the one that holds or has done the procurement background on this. They would be providing us with PPE that would be stored in vending machines. Those vending machines, the way they work is you would enter your employee ID. That would give you access to the item. You would then use the item, whether it be leather gloves, a hard hat. They can provide saw blades, various different pieces of equipment. What it does is give us inventory control to see the employees who are purchasing each piece of equipment, where that's going. Also, it reduces the amount of billing. There's no shipping and there's no fee for any of this. The machines are completely owned by them, maintained by them. There's no fee to stock. They just charge us for what we use. They would bill us in either a monthly or bi-monthly, so every 2 weeks, type platform, depending on how we choose. The largest cost is to get the item stocked, and we would do that in a very slow mechanism so that we don't incur a huge cost to our operating budget when they start to stock these items. There is, like I said, there's no cost for the machines. There's no cost for the data for them to transport it back and forth, and so that's what this is about. This was kind of an idea. They used to have a warehouse out there that was maintained. And so currently what we do is we buy a lot through various vendors. We incur shipping costs, and a lot of invoices come in because we're purchasing through a lot of different places, and a lot of small purchases are made, which requires a lot of staff time. That would eliminate all of this if we go to this agreement. And then what we plan to do is pick about 10 items every year and check them against other vendors to ensure that the pricing is still in line and that we're still getting the best available pricing.
Randy?
How much would we spend a year on this, the PPE?
I'm guessing probably in the range of between $50,000 up to $100,000, because it's also not alone just PPE. They can provide us with pipe materials. They can provide, like I said, they can provide even like sawzall blades, whatever you want, they provide and offer.
But obviously pipe isn't going to be in a machine. It's going to be a separate purchase.
They do it as an inventory control. They come out to your site. Whatever's been used, they then restock and bill you. And so there's varying levels. And this used to be done, I'm not sure the company that was doing it, and I wouldn't want to say, but this has become very common. El Dorado Irrigation just went to this. You can get other vendors that do the same thing. They don't have pipe, of course, in a vending machine. You would be surprised what they do have in vending machines, because they also supply lockers that lock. So even if you're talking like you wanted them to have access to like an orbital saw, you can have that in a locker and it unlocks based off. You can also control the amount that they're able to get. And then, like I said, it's only by your employee ID, and that tracks everything. So there are quite a bit of purchases that are made on this and quite a bit of time. And I think it just helps staff not have to drive, which also has a cost if we go and pick it up. There's a cost in gas and fuel. So,
how long would we be
tied
in? If we signed a contract, how long are we?
60-day notice is a sunset.
60-day notice, and
yep.
You're out.
Yep. Yeah, and they would come and pick up their equipment and just remove it from the site within 60 days.
All right. Well,
I mean, you have
might be worth trying then, as long as you can get out of it easier if it doesn't, for some reason, doesn't work out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not
this
not honestly, what they did for a living. I don't, you know.
It's very common that you see this in large organizations, even small. It gives you inventory tracking control. It also gives you the ability to see purchases. It stops a lot of shipping costs. And then you can kind of build it up as you go along how you see fit. It's very, at least in my experience, very uncommon to see where people are purchasing a lot of stuff external anymore, because a lot of it is just done. They do a large bid and they come in and take over the warehouse and supply that stuff for, you know, whatever the contract is, which usually in cities is 5 years. So, and this one kind of sunsets and they're tied to the state. It came through California State is who the procurement was done by. So it is a large contract. And that NASPO agreement is what gives us the pricing, and very good pricing is what it does. So we would just do a check every year to make sure that that's still ongoing.
So, I mean, do we need a vote on this or anything?
I think this needs to go to the board because it's just a supplier any more than we would want to take.
I mean, you wouldn't do it for like toilet tissue or something.
Yeah, right. Or even all the supplies that they purchase from Grainger, you know, every day. I don't think that this needs to go to the board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the committee likes it. We'll move forward. Thank you.
Well, I think what Randy said is try it and see what happens.
Yeah, and that's kind of was my approach. I've seen it done in a lot of places. I think here we need to try it out, see how it works, and then if we're liking it and feel that we're getting better than competitive pricing and it's showing good stuff, then we expand it a little.
Okay.
If not, we pull out of the contract and move on.
Yeah.
The next item, same kind of thing. This is really just a discussion item. It's well within our authority to be able to do it. So this is an above ground fueling station. It would provide basically unleaded gas, 87 unleaded, to have access here in behind the gates. The current cost or the current way we handle fueling is through P cards, which is a government credit card purchase. They usually purchase it here locally. The cost of the gas here locally is pretty high. The cost that we've been quoted, it does fluctuate based off market value. So when we checked, it was about $5.50 a gallon here locally. What they were willing to provide it for was $3.49 a gallon. There is no cost for the tank or the fueling appurtenances. It's a small enough tank that it doesn't have vapor recovery system on it. There is different ways we can handle the purchasing. Typically what I've seen done at most places is just a lock on the handle so that you can't remove the handle to pump gas, and then just a spreadsheet that you track the employee ID, vehicle number, the mileage on the vehicle, which then of course can be broken out into fuel efficiency so that you can kind of track the usage of gas and whether it's being appropriately used. But this honestly, when we looked at it, could be a cost savings of well over $50,000 a year for the district. We use about 1,000 gallons every 2 weeks. And so the cost difference being about $2 pushes it up to about $48,000 a year would be the cost savings. We would only have to update our SPCC, which is a spill prevention site plan. And there are no requirements outside of that for an above ground tank, except for showing where it could impact a waterway or get into a storm drain. There isn't like monitoring wells or any of that associated with above ground. We do have an above ground diesel fueling station currently. This would be up here at the gate, so it would be accessible to security as well as operational staff for the district.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
And this doesn't have to go to the board either. It's just, again, another supplier. Okay.
Yeah, we have talked about expanding that area that it sits at currently. Right now, I believe it's kind of a, we could measure the square footage of the pad that's out there, asphalt. We've looked at expanding it a little bit to also have it striped this, so that security, when our construction project ends, security would be able to move back and back inside the gate and park there in striped parking. Because currently they've just parked in that area as kind of like a lot, but that's where the gas tank would be sitting, and so I want to make sure that staff still has an appropriate parking area. This would dovetail basically the end of construction, because that's where the construction area currently is for their supplies. Currently the new chemical tanks are there. So we would get in contact with Ramos Oil and start setting this up, but it would follow when they move that stuff out of that area so that we don't have a high potential for hitting it.
Okay. So that's a done deal, right? We don't need anything further. Okay.
No, it's just choosing a supplier.
The next one here is CentOS, same kind of a program. CentOS has a large program. It's called the Omni program. They basically provide a service which is to go through all of our first aid kits to remove anything that's expired, to provide new updated equipment, which is an OSHA requirement. Currently, we think that we are following that, but we could definitely use some help. There's no cost associated to it. They bill us for the items that they replace. The quote that is in here is to get us up to date in what we're required to have. This does include security as well, so it's for all the vehicles. It's for the sites themselves, so they're required to have a first aid kit in each building. There's also, what was asked is to make sure that they have a blood stopping kit, which is that premium bleeding control kit. Those were designed to, I believe, have one for operations and one for security, so that they could use those in either one. And this was worked with the general manager, and this is why we're bringing it forward. It's within our limit, but it was to just make the board aware of kind of the direction we're hoping to go. You can see the current cost there. It's about $6,100 for currently what we would need to get us up to date. And then there would be just reoccurring billing.
Right, so you're not paying again for the cabinets or anything?
No.
No, okay.
No, that's a one-time.
Do we need to train on how to use the bleeding control kit? Because Amelia doesn't, for instance, know how to...
That would be an item that needs to be trained on. Typically inside of them, it's like a bag, and so it would explain how to use it as well.
Okay, we can just look at it together and know what we're doing before we get into it.
But we can definitely train. We would just read through and put on...
We'll train it ourselves. Yep. Okay.
Join the Army, they'll teach you for free.
I bet. Well, and a free hot sakata, I understand.
That'd be a good place for you.
Wouldn't that be?
I think. They like strong. Right, they like strong coffee.
Okay, so yeah, here I go. Okay, so then we're okay with this. We'll move along.
The next item is Resolution 2025-03, a one-year water supply. I'll kind of turn that over to you, Mr. Merchant, since you're kind of heading up that effort. And what we have is kind of a resolution that we hope to...
Right. Basically, it states the obvious. Number one, we don't have an emergency supply of water. Borne out by even the existing data in the Integrated Water Master Plan. And it essentially does nothing in itself to solve that problem, but it does establish it as a priority for the district to attain and maintain a one-year supply of water. One-year supply, because anything beyond that, quite frankly, at this point in time is unrealistic. Even that is unrealistic at this point in time. And it basically establishes a level and how we do that, which is to take, you know, essentially 4 years in a row of production and select the highest year to use that as a source for emergency supply. It acknowledges that there's 750 acre feet of water in Clementia that is the basis or the start of that emergency supply, and it also states that anything we augment or mitigate beyond that point on a priority basis contributes to maintaining that source. It's really just a statement that, you know, we understand the problem, and we're assigning a priority to folks that live here and to the developments that we've entitled that are not yet finished. And if things get better or things change, we can always amend it or change it or revoke it. But I think at this point in time, it's necessary to make that statement that, you know, number one, we don't have it, and number two, it's a priority to go get it. That's about it.
Yeah,
pretty well self-explanatory.
So I've been asked a couple of times about empty lots or the amount that we've basically served will serves to. Currently, there's 198 lots. That's residences east and west. And at Riverside, we have 110 lots. 23 are active, which means they have meters and we're serving water to them now. 87 are outstanding. Of those 23 that are active, I believe potentially 9 have already been served permits, which means there will probably be 9 more meters installed here soon when those houses are either purchased or finished build. But that's where we currently stand. So that's a total of, you know, looks like about 285 lots that I see from the residences east and west and the outstanding lots at Riverview.
Now, wait a minute. That's Bob's lots, the east and west, plus the
plus
outstanding
Riverview.
From
K.
Riverview?
Yes, it's Riverview.
Okay.
I forget the property owner or the entity there. It's changed a couple of times.
Okay. Questions, discussion, Randy?
So who wrote this?
Me. I wrote it.
It has gone to Mr. Enright.
It's gone through Mr. Enright.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
On the last paragraph,
very good.
On page 2, in years in which water storage in Lake Clementia and any water available from other sources, are you trying to say they're the three reservoirs, the water storage in the three reservoirs, how much water there is in the three reservoirs?
Basically, yeah. Basically, what it says is that if we don't have enough water to satisfy demand, it gives, which it probably
no,
does.
I get the overall.
Okay.
I'm asking in that language, in years in which water storage in Lake Clementia and any water available from other sources. Does
right.
that mean the water storage in the three reservoirs?
Yeah, or reservoirs, or if
you
if
come up with a
time,
if you come up with
water.
A new
right, right.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought it said.
Okay.
But I just so in the big, I mean, I voted against this at the board level because I don't. It's a feel-good thing, but there's no meat behind it. What? Why 12 months? Why a year's worth? What is the?
Well, I'm trying to set, you know, goals need to be measurable and attainable, and right now you might get through 4, 5, 6 months, maybe you double that with the ability to enact substantial or severe conservation,
my question is, what is the thought process that leads us to say we need 12 months of water storage? Why not 2 years? Why not 15 months? Why not 9 months? How did you get to that 1 year is the goal?
If you implement Clementia as part of that emergency storage, you're somewhere between somewhere between 8 and going backwards 5 months short to complete a source of supply for the people that live here and the entitled developments. So piecing that together, and like I said, this can be amended or tossed in the garbage at some point in time, I was looking for an attainable number. I mean, it's we could say, yeah, we could say 48 months. I mean, we're lucky to get to a year, but I want to establish at least going forward that we have a priority on an emergency source of supply, and that anything we mitigate or anything we find contributes to that on a priority basis. And I can do that, I suppose, for 48 months. That doesn't help anybody, but...
Well, I don't know that 12 months helps anybody, well, but I guess my objection to this whole idea, and I don't have an objection to having a policy like this, but I believe it should be predicated on some type of engineering analysis and not just pulling this 12-month number out of the air. I think you've got the cart in front of the horse. This is something, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to have these consultants tell us where we stand in supply versus demand. And when you get that analysis, here's what you're short, here's all the parameters, maybe then you've got enough information to come up with a policy for something to shoot for. But at this point, I think you're just, my engineering mind says there's really no engineering principle behind this goal. It's not, it may be because it's attainable, but really what good is that? What we really need to find out is how much water do we need, and how much water are we short, and then maybe from there we can go to, you know, this ought to be our goal to keep so much water available and all these things. But I think this is premature. In a nutshell, I think it's premature.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm sure that I will, it got voted 3-1 passed at the last board meeting, so it needs to go back to the board, because that's...
Yeah, and Randy, I could also... So I found something the other day, because I've been asked to prepare what annual reports are required when we pass 3,000 connections. One of those reports, which comes as part of the Urban Water Management Plan, is an annual water supply assessment by the district, basically showing supply and demand, and that we have the ability to meet 1 year. We have to fill that out every single year. So that's something that's coming up. But just to be aware, I'm not advocating one direction or another. This is solely a board policy. But just so you're, and I could produce that if you want to see it.
No, I get that, but I see that as a separate subject from this. This is saying we want to keep 1 year's worth of supplying the reservoirs. That's saying, that's a report that says, do you or don't you? It's, yeah.
Well, and it doesn't. It assesses. You might get a year where we sit right now with people that live here and entitled development. You might get a year if you were to take Clementia and implement it and protect it, which this says, as an emergency source, and you implement pretty severe conservation to double that supply. You drop the demand, you use the supply, and you come up with maybe you get a year. That's basically where we are now, and that's kind of what Lisa Mattis said. When you extrapolate her numbers, that's what it says.
Yeah, I think if and when we get back to this integrated water master plan and try and complete it, I think these numbers are going to change substantially. And so I have a hard time even referencing the numbers in here, because I don't, I'm like you've been saying for the last few years, I don't trust these numbers, but I want to, and I want to get to a point where I can.
Did Richard just have a question? Is there a
Richard did have a comment, yeah.
Yes, sir.
I just like to say I don't have any answers, but I did see this. I did share some of the same questions Randy had. Where did this 12 months come from, and when does it start, blah, blah, blah. But on the other hand, all of our supply revolves around the 12-month cycle of the Cosumnes River. And I think that is one of the essential things. And I think in that sense, maybe 12 months is appropriate. Or you know, put that into the calculation. Maybe it's 9 months, maybe it's 12 months. But so like I say, I don't have any answers, but I did have the questions about the 12 months, where does it come from? But on the other hand, 12 months sounds pretty good because that's the cycle of the river. I mean, there's 1 year we couldn't pump from the consumers. And that's the 12 months there. We have to wait another 12 months until we can start pumping again. So maybe the 12 months is appropriate. Like I say, I don't have any answers, but I think those are some considerations.
Thank you. So it goes to the board for discussion and action.
Yeah. I've added it to the agenda for the 21st.
Next case.
Must be something.
All right. The final item here is easements across Genco property, which is just.
So I've been advised by counsel that I need to recuse and leave during this discussion, and I thank you for making it the last.
Sorry.
Agenda item so that I can head out without.
I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware of that.
It was just lucky that it. Yeah. But I'll make it the last agenda item.
I would have asked for it to be moved to the last.
Oh, of course. I'll try and do that. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for the coffee.
Anytime. It's what I do.
We'll announce that you've left the building. Okay.
All right. So the last item is a conversation over the easements and possible abandonment of an easement that still exists across the Genco property. It's district policy to try and avoid at all costs to enter into agreements across private property that's a sole owner that could potentially change hands. The reason behind that is it creates a problem should the easement agreement not be recognized by people that potentially are new or existing a new owner, and they put something over the top of our easement, and it potentially could cause a problem with litigation long term down the road. And this easement, there is the potential to move this to just in front of the property line into what currently is the golf course's property. And have a right-of-way that would include what we typically require, which is a drivability to be able to inspect the line should there ever potentially be problems. It also gets it further away from the river and any floodplain issues should that sewer line break and potentially leak or cause leaching into the river, which would be a large fine for the district. So this opens it up for conversation basically to abandon the existing easement that's still in place, and then potentially we have one developer that's advised this as they wanted to move that existing. This would kind of also answer that in one.
Yeah, one answer. The original 1992 easement. One of the reasons that I wanted him to bring this up is when we discussed this when Mike was here, we left this in a way that, well, give us your plans and then we'll make a decision. And then I was thinking that through, and I went back and listened to the audio, make sure that's what he said, and unfortunately it was. I didn't want you guys to do that. I didn't want you guys to
too late.
I didn't want Mike. Mike, it's already in Mike's plan.
It's already, we're doing a sewer study right now.
All right. Yeah. So, well, yeah, you're doing a sewer study, but you haven't moved it forward.
No.
Okay. Well, that's
once
that's
done, we're going to present it to you.
Yeah, and so we wanted to get, we didn't, I did. I wanted to get a definitive board action on it so you guys knew the answer before you finished the sewer study. It just seems stupid to me to have you finish it, bring it here, or send it to the county and then bring it here, however they're going to work this, and then tell you, well, you know, those easements have been abandoned. So
I should also, sorry to interrupt. I should also advise district council has made it clear in conversations with me and written communication that the district itself cannot enter into an agreement with a member of the board because of conflict of interest. It's a law or a legal requirement. So there isn't a way for us to even enter into an agreement to run an easement across that property with Director Janko.
Yeah. Okay.
We understand that.
Huh?
We understand.
Okay. All right. I just didn't want to do any more damage than we're already doing. Okay. Is that it?
So this isn't going to the board right now. We're just talking about it.
No, it is. It is.
So I'm moving this to the board.
Yeah, I think we need to define at this point in time what we need to do is to if the board is in agreement, we need to abandon the original Guyer 1992 easement. There is the other easement that was a 2015 easement.
Has already
subsequently been abandoned. after the problem with John and Nadia,
right.
And was abandoned. We did formally abandon that. I found the found the ordinance.
So for the packet, do you want the same documents that are in this packet?
Yeah, put it all in there, and we'll go from there.
Very easy.
Anything else from anyone, ma'am?
No, I don't have any.
Is that you're look like you're dying to ask a question here? What
are you getting up, yeah?
About
Eastman?
No.
Or about anything?
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
Director comments? No. So with that, we'll close the meeting. Meeting's adjourned.
At 9:32.
9:32.
Thank you.